Our World Cafe Week at the Warhol concludes today with a ragged but rockin' performance from Soul Asylum. The band's new album is Silver Lining, and it was recorded by original members Dave Perner and Dan Murphy with longtime bass player Carl Mueller while Mueller was in remission from cancer. He has since died, and the silver lining of the title comes from the band's reuniting and making the album. In some ways, the indie rock band that originally recorded for the hometown Twin Tone label in Minneapolis never recovered from the worldwide success of their album Grave Dancers Union and the single Runaway Train. We'll hear some stories about those days, but first, I asked Dan Murphy to explain the significance of Silver Lining as the title of the new album and to give kind of a timeline of Carl Mueller's illness.
Beloved friend and accomplice in crime and all things great and some things not so great. And our longtime bass friend, bass player Carl, got diagnosed pretty tragically with cancer. And right before we were going to go in and make this record, and then initially he got treated with chemo and radiation, and he was kind of like the poster boy for cancer recovery. You know, he still kind of looked like a middle-aged male model, you know. And we decided we were going to make this record. We kind of been kind of fussing about that. We didn't really feel an urgent need to get together and record again, and that really kind of became the impetus to get together. And he was in remission for a while, and he really wanted to do this. And we didn't know of the complications in the long term, you know, how it was going to affect us. But it seemed like as good of a reason as we needed to get together and make a Soul Asylum record. So that was the initial spark. And he ended up playing on more than half of the record. And
that's great. So he was really the emphasis. You guys, you were not thinking about doing anything like that.
No, we were kind of enjoying some time off. And Dave and I have started to do a bunch of interviews, and everybody's like, what have you guys been doing in the last 8 years? It just kind of seemed like a yawn to me. It was just kind of, you know, you kind of let the divas that dance around with headsets kind of do their thing, and then, you know, whatever else is going to happen in music, you just kind of watch it and chuckle or whatever. So there's a million other things in the world that you don't get to do when you do this. I mean, this is not me complaining about doing this. It's more like, there's so many other opportunities and events that are parallel. And it was really nice, I think, for Dave and Carl and myself to have a kid, do whatever it is that normal adults do.
Live a
little
bit. Live a lot. See what other, like, what normal life is like.
Because this ain't so normal. Dudes and gals.
Well, we should introduce the present rhythm section of the band. And,
with great honor.
Mr. Michael Bland behind the drum kit. And a guy who was involved very much in the production of this album, John Fields, on the bass guitar. So what's next in this hootenanny?
Well, I tell you what, it was getting a little heavy for a second there. Did you feel that? So let's lighten it up a little bit, you know? This is basically a song about getting loaded, so.
Enjoy!
Shouldn't have got so loaded. My band near exploded. Oh, Lord. Oh. I should have known it. Whatever the price is, whatever the crisis, oh please don't leave me to my own devices. Devices, oh please don't leave me to my own devices. She was a pretty good waitress. Said she waited on Elvis. talks too much.
This is a song off of our upcoming release. It's called What You Need.
Spray painted his wardrobe black to make the scene. That's what you need. That's
That one goes out to Andy Warhol.
What You Need. That's another one from The Silver Lining, the new one from Soul Asylum, our guest today. And we are at the Warhol Museum. And the Warhol Museum has a great gift shop, which incidentally is open until 10 o'clock tonight. And the reason why I say that is they lent me a prop for tonight, and they said I had to plug them. They have a lot of Warhol-esque music in there. Stones and Lou Reed, John Cale, Velvet Underground. And they lent me a copy of this album, which I'm holding up, which is Loaded. And I understand this album had something to do, Dan, with you and Dave hooking up to begin
with.
Oh,
yeah. We got to actually play Sweet Jane on that record with Lou Reed at when they opened the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum or whatever in Cleveland. They were like, they give you a list of people that they think would be really cool for you to play with. And you kind of go, And then they said, what about like Lou Reed or Iggy Pop? We said, yeah. So we got to like play, we did a song with Iggy, Backdoor Man, and we threw a little bit of I Want to Be Your Dog in there. And then we played Sweet Jane, and Dave and I were doing the harmonies like on Sweet Jane. He's like, turned around, and he's like, I haven't heard those since the Velvet Underground, because it's like they're really high. Like, you know. But it was certainly like one of the more memorable things. It was funny, like Lou and Iggy did all these interviews together, and you'd think that they would have been in the same scene, you know. And it was like, Lou was like, I really thought I Want to Be Your Dog was a really good name for a song. He's like, well, thank you, Lou. You know, they were like, it was like very formal and polite. It was really weird, you know. It was just like some of this stuff. It was very surreal, you know. And Dave and I were kind of sitting there like, wow, this is weird, you know. We didn't say a peep. We sat on this couch and let those guys interview each other, you know.
They were wagging their fingers at me not to mix beer and wine, and I was like, I can't believe I'm having dinner with these notorious, you know, addicts or whatever. And they're going, don't mix beer and wine, sonny.
Yeah, a real dangerous combination for them. Yeah. Yeah.
In the big picture, right? Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about Minnesota music because this year also Closer to the Stars came out, which brought together at Soul Asylum's Twin Tone, sort of a best of the Twin Tone years. And also there's a replacement's best of. And Dave, I haven't heard this, but there's something about you're on the album in some kind of a fight at the a club there.
What song is that?
Kids Don't Follow.
Right. It was the first song of Stink, and it's kind of superimposed. So there's this lore that goes along with it. And at the, can I swear?
Try it.
I mean, at the beginning of the record, the Minneapolis police is busting up a party, which is, you know, we used to have these warehouse parties and all the bands would play, and it was real, you know, back in the good old days. And you just hear this guy in the background going, "F you!" I mean, I remember really particular. We were just yelling it for the sake of doing it, you know. We were just trying to make noise and yell at the top of our lungs. And when it's superimposed on the beginning of this track, it sounds like the cops are breaking up a party, and I'm screaming, you at him, and then the Replacements come tearing in with this song. And it really,
the way it really went,
great illusion.
It's the cops broke up the party and everybody went home. It wasn't so defiant then. It's like, oh, Dave said fuck you, and they said, who said that? It was like, oh, we gotta go, and then the party was over. You know, but hey, that's show business, you know.
Twin Tone was one of the fabulous labels, and I always had, I don't know, from the outside it looked like there was kind of like a family vibe to the label. Is that accurate? Where the bands all hang out? Or was it
dysfunctional family?
Yeah,
vibe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, there's the legendary fact that you guys became the B team, and now where did that come from?
Paul Westberg's mouth.
Oh. So we won't go on. Well, the B team's done pretty well.
But I think the thing about the Replacements was, I mean, I went to the fifth floor, and you look at, you know, pictures that Andy Warhol took of, you know, Topper Heaton and Joe Strummer in an elevator. I mean, that's kind of what their school of thought was, and, you know, be outrageous and say whatever you want. But there wasn't really like this. I mean, Husker Du and the Replacements hate each other. You know, there was a rivalry there.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I just felt like it was never an issue until I read about it in Japan 20 years after the fact, you know. You know, well, what is the problem with you and the Replacements? Like, I don't know. You know, you tell me.
Well, Tommy was in this band for a little while, right?
Yeah.
And was it also true that to get respect at home, you guys had to actually do something out of town? Yeah, because I heard you guys, when you guys first toured to New York, that went well. Was that
Carl
did that help
was
you?
Yeah. Handsome, so he could get us shows in town. He like the woman that booked First Avenue. She like you go in her office, and there wouldn't be pictures of me and Dave. There'd be pictures of Carl. I'm like, that's kind of weird. But so we'd get some gigs. But Minneapolis is kind of like the, I guess Missouri's a show me state, but it should be Minnesota because like, you know, show me what you got. It's like, you know, so nothing really happens. Same thing with the Replacements in every band. Like Bob Mould told us early. It's like, you know what, you guys. Spend $800 of your gig money, get a van, and get out of town. You know, that's like 1983 advice.
Back to the stage of the Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh with our guest Soul Asylum from the new album Silver Lining. Here's a live performance of Success Is Not So Sweet.
Streets
Success Is Not So Sweet, another one of the new ones. I have to let our radio audience in on this, that Michael Bland was actually the only one on that song who remained in normal position as as Dan sat down. John Fields played the bass in full Ravi Shankar position. Yeah. And Dave Perner was lying flat on his back the entire time, so we're glad they're so comfortable.
It's kind of early for that.
So, Dave, as soon as you get tuned up here, I understand that song kind of came in the wake of the success of Grave Dancers Union sometime back then.
Yeah, it's a funny story because I had written a song and nobody either heard it or liked it. At the time, it just wasn't palatable, you know. Nobody wanted to hear that at the time. So we played it once at the little club called the 7th Street Entry in Minneapolis. We kind of have a tendency to do like an unannounced show and try out a bunch of new material. And I was like, fine, nobody likes this song. And I blew it off, and I never heard from it again. And then a guy that used to be my guitar tech found a bootleg of it and brought it in and played it for Danny, and suddenly everybody really liked it. And I was like, well, I don't know, y'all slept on it the first time, but I guess it makes more sense now or something. I don't really...
Well, if you're coming right off of that kind of success you guys had, it must be hard to hear that message, you know, at that point.
Bingo, guy.
I want to talk a little bit about that, because I interviewed you guys around that time, and Dave, I got to say, it's like you did not want to be in the room. It's like this was not where you wanted to be. You were like sick of this stuff. How crazy did it get? What was the most bizarro stuff you guys had to do around that time? Because that song was not only a success with rock fans, it became top 40.
Open for the Spin Doctors. That's pretty bizarre.
Yeah.
It became very non-musical for me at some point. I just felt like it was like, all right, come on, stand over here and play your hit song, get on that helicopter, go over there and go do that thing. And you're just like, where's the music, you know?
Yeah.
So
I remember we were in Europe one time, and we've been doing a whole bunch of interviews. And it's always a language thing, you know. And you go, maybe I just don't get it, you know. So you're asking me weird questions, you know, like, ooh, who is watching your cat now when you're over here? You're like, I don't know. You know, and so you go out. And so then, like, our tour manager was kind of like the bullshit detector, Bill Sullivan, who worked with Replacements and owned a club. He's like, he just throws like these 20 magazines on the table. He goes, hey, I just want you guys to know what kind of press you've been doing all day. It's like Pop Candy Rock. You know, it's like Michael, the David Hasselhoff, Michael Jackson.
It was really like these teen magazines where I'm.
Dang. Or draped in an American flag. I walked in this photo shoot and I was like, what the f*** going on here? You know, I was like, you know.
That was the weirdest thing that happened to me, because I didn't know why it was happening, but I walked out of a show in Hamburg or Munich or someplace, and I got mobbed by these people pulling my hair out and stuff. And this big roadie was trying to hold back all these screaming girls, and I spun around and I tried to fling my beer at the crowd of girls, and I just hit the roadie right in the face, and he was trying to help me, you know. And and that led to why is this happening, and it was these magazines that were promoting the band just to, you know, without telling us.
I mean, you know, like when your questions is like, you know, like your plants and cats and your favorite color and, you know, what day is your birthday and I was like, ooh, this is kind of light, you know? It's like, don't you want to hear about the new tunes or anything? And then, you know, but I don't know. It just seems like, it's just kind of our original plan was to get enough fans where we could pack the shit in a van and go play a club somewhere. And that's, you know, that's...
Yep. Well, you did do something in that era which got preserved and put out on disc, which was play a prom. Which I thought was just a cool move. Absolutely. Was it really fun for you guys?
Yeah, we had to wear purple suits for a while. But, you know, it's like we're kind of thinking, like, if it's a prom, you know, you want to play some, like, booty grabbing or shaking. So we did, like, we kind of put together a set, like, you know.
We really thought we were going to impress these kids with, like, our Marvin Gaye cover and all this, like, and they're all 15, so they had never heard any of this music. And we're like, what the hell? And then we finished the first set, I remember, and they all went over to the other part of the airplane hangar where we were playing and started listening to Hanson. And that's when we kind of knew our goose was cooked, you know. It really was the beginning of the boy band era, and we were just like, man.
If I hear that mbop one more time, I'm going to kill someone, you know.
Soul Asylum.
Be careful what you wish for, I'll tell you that.
Soul Asylum is playing live on the World Cafe today, and let's go back to some tunage.
This is our last selection for you tonight. You've been great. Thanks for coming out. I'll try to make a point of getting back to Pittsburgh.
How about tomorrow night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, how about tomorrow night? Not if you're listening on the radio, though. Right? Love fast rules, man.
The night, like a firefly without a light. You were there like a blowtorch burning. Was a key that could use a little turning. So tired that I couldn't even sleep. Oh, many secrets I couldn't keep. Promised myself I wouldn't leave. One more promise I couldn't keep. It seemed no one can help me now. I'm in too deep. There's no way out. This time I have really led myself astray. Runaway train, never going back. Wrong way on a one-way track.
Thanks a lot. Very sweet.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Soul Asylum's our guest on the World Cafe. Our thanks to our audience at the Warhol. And to a great band.
And thanks again to Soul Asylum for a wonderful session today. Thanks also to all the people at WYEP, our World Cafe affiliate in Pittsburgh, for making our week at the Warhol such a treat.